Hi, this is Eric Condren. You're listening to the Sens Call-Ups.
Studio 65 on the Sens Underground Network. Welcome to episode number 10 of the Sens Call-Ups for Thursday, January 31st, 2013. I'm Cardinal, and I'm here with the usual suspects, Pan and Canuck. The Senators are off to a fantastic 5-1-1 start, including a beautiful 5-1 drubbing of the Habs. But it's not all good news right now, with number one center Jason Spezza going under the knife for a herniated disc. Thank goodness for the work the Murrays have done over the past few years to give this team depth it hasn't had in the past. But I, for one, don't think this is the way I wanted to find out how good that depth actually is. Boys, we've got good news, we've got bad news, but most of all, we've got hope that we'll get through it.
Yep, that's for sure. So remember when I guessed it on that NHL on the Ice podcast, and they asked me about Turris?
Yep.
I said, like... Well, I'm not sure if he's going to be a number one center, but like I'm happy with where he is right now. Well,
going to find out now.
Yep. Yeah, we'll see that now, hopefully.
Now's your shot.
Yep.
Well, at least we've got depth to look at filling in the rest of the middle of it. Because imagine if this was a few years ago when we were struggling to find four centers that we might be able to use.
Still say it now. Mike Fisher was never a second line center.
Agreed. Very good third line center.
Very good third line center.
One of the best in the league. But at least now we have options for, you know, who to put down the middle, depending on the role we want to put them in. We're not saying with this we have these four centers, so they have to play. We have more than that, and we can move them around. I'm sure it'll all work out. Hopefully it'll work out well. But at least we have options. So it's not all bad news. That's all I'm trying to say. As usual, the forums are getting busier at sensunderground.com, and you can send your thoughts to us via email at podcast@senscallups.com. We've had a few this week. Thank you. We'll be getting to those later on in the show. And you can also follow and interact with us on Twitter. Canuck, you want to give a quick review, in case we have new listeners this week, of what this podcast is all about?
Yeah. Well, we're up to episode 10 now. So for those that have been following us, they already know what we do. But if you're listening for the first time, it might be good for us to recap what we are. We are the Sens Call-Ups, and we are broadcasting on the Sens Underground Network. Now, the Sens Underground used to be a podcast that ran pretty much weekly for around 7 years. And some reason last season, they got the bright idea that they would retire and go to Boca Vista, Florida. Well, not really, but they have... stopped regularly doing their podcast, and that's where the three of us got the bright idea that, hey, you know, maybe we could keep things going. And discussions with the Sens Underground community, they actually have opened up. They're keeping their podcast feed going, and we are going to be one of the shows that we're going to put on an episode. We're going to try to do, you know, a regular, perhaps even weekly a show, and hopefully some other people are going to start putting up their own shows. Yes, that's a call out to you. Hey, if you got, even if it's a one-off, you got a show that you want to record yourself and broadcast to Sens fans, by all means, get in touch with the Sens Underground, and they will hook you up. So the three of us, you know, Cardinal, Canuck, and Pan, we've been doing this for a little while. We're so happy that we got through the lockout. That was a little brutal, not talking about hockey, but talking about business. But yeah, that's about it.
Cool. Thank you.
I still want to see the TJ and Homer show.
Oh, let's put Sistine in there for some extra fun.
Cooking with Bacon, but Sistine.
It'll be angry.
I don't
angry.
Know where he's been. Have you guys seen him? I don't think he's been around in a while.
I don't know. I haven't been in the forums a whole lot, but I'm sure after saying that, he'll turn up.
Oh, emailed the show.
Oh, he was on the forums. So I saw him.
Yeah, he's around. Yeah, we should get a good hate podcast going. Just one, like a hate episode. Let them all, you know, come out of their corners swinging. Could be entertaining. All right. Game recaps. Let's get through these pretty quickly. We got three games to get through.
There you go. Game on!
Thank you. Game. That was a beautiful sound in a couple of the games, to be sure. Game five. Game five was Penguins visiting the Sens. This was the first game. This was the game that Alfie was out with flu-like symptoms. And I'm getting really, really sick. Just before I start this, I have to have a little Whiskey Tango Foxtrot moment. I'm getting really sick of how incredibly nondescript some of the descriptions of injuries are. Why do we say flu-like symptoms? Just, he's out sick. Why is it flu-like symptoms? Is the next time that we talk about Jason Spezza, is it going to be, well, he's got an upper body injury-like symptoms? It's just getting out of hand. Just say that they've got the flu. It's not flu-like symptoms.
I sneeze. Yeah, that's a flu-like symptom.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I kind of wish that they would have like a disclosure thing with it, kind of like they do in football.
Yeah.
But I think it's different because people just kind of aim for it, but
yeah, they would target it.
Aggravate it, so...
Anyway, that was just, it's one of those things that gets on my nerves. It's, oh, we're using all these really nondescript terms.
Last year was one of the Habs. He ended up having the flu or strep throat. And I think they called it as an inner body injury I think it was an inner body injury.
Yeah.
It's like,
okay.
He's sick.
He's sick. Yeah, he's a scratch. He's sick. Enough said. Not like someone's going to go try and spear him. Oh, it's an inner body injury. Let me see if I can find that. Anyway, so Alfie was out with flu-like symptoms. Gonchar was wearing one of the A's because there were three assistant captains with the captain out. First period, there were some really good chances early on for the Senators. It was the shots were 5-1 at one point. Your aunt was heavily involved in this game right from the beginning because Spezza, I think, was talking to her when he misses high and cracked the glass, which caused a nice delay of the game for a little while. And then Gonchar had a big shot off a face-off, but Fleury made a fantastic save after that. Spezza got a 2 minutes for hooking penalty, and during the power play, Dupuis went down on the wing, and Craig Anderson made an absolutely outstanding save from outside the blue paint by getting out there to cut down the angle and just shut him down. It was the first of many that Craig Anderson was making that night. The game overall was kind of scrambly through the first period. There weren't a lot of whistles, but it wasn't a really fast-moving game. It was kind of messy in both ends of the ice. Near the end of the first period, there was a broken stick for Carlson down by the Pens blue line and followed quickly by a turnover by Zach Smith in the neutral zone. Carlson was trying to get a stick, but by the time he got it, he was out of position, and Neil scored on that particular play. Unfortunate. It was a sort of a series of bad incidents, but that's the way goals happen a lot these days in the NHL. Silverberg had a slashing call on Crosby late in the period, and the television replay that I was watching, it looked an awful lot like Silverberg didn't actually touch him, and there was some sort of weird incident with his stick getting caught in the boards or in the little dasher at the bottom of them. It wasn't really very obvious, but it looked like a bit of a weird call.
Well, all night, if anybody even touched Crosby or Malkin and they, you know, went down or you know, stopped, it seemed like it was always a call. It seemed like a joke.
Yeah, it was a little strange. The shots were 10 for the Penguins and 12 for the Senators after the first period. In the second period, there was still a penalty kill going on, so Anderson was looking sharp. There was an incident. Zach Smith was took a hit and was down on the ground, and then Tanner Glass basically drove his head into the boards while he was down, and there was no penalty on it.
That's a hockey play.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later because we actually have a question about that via email, but it was one of the I wrote it down, and I was watching it going, that just happened, and there was no call on it after some of the really weird calls that have been made so far in this game. Okay. I didn't think it was O'Rourke or Peel who were refereeing, but all right, let's just keep going.
No, I've noticed Zach Smith is just getting hosed game after game this week.
Do they think he's maybe they're looking at thinking he's Konopka or he's Nick Foligno, so he deserves all this sort of thing?
Well,
I don't get it.
Call him for embellishment and then play your card. Like, don't just not call the game. Like,
Oh, it's just ridiculous. And he's been getting hammered in the past couple of games.
There's so many interference calls. And listening to some of the people sitting around me, I was at this game live, and people are, you know, kind of making the joke, why are they trying to turn this into, like, non-contact hockey? Or, but there's so many interference calls going on now. It is confusing. And the players are confused. The coaches look confused. I really don't know what they're doing. I know it's the beginning of the season. They're trying to set the bar, but this isn't going to continue through the whole season, I hope. It never does. They always soften up closer to the playoffs. So,
yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. I noticed Malkin was really chirpy during this game. It seemed like at every whistle when he was on the ice, he was yapping at somebody. A lot of the times it was the refs, but he didn't get an unsportsmanlike call or anything like that. But he was really chirpy. I don't know what
might have gotten lost in translation.
Maybe that was it. I don't know. It was in this period that Dupree drilled Borowiecki into the glass and got only 2 minutes for it. Like, it was a brutal hit right on the numbers. 2 minutes, that's it. Okay, sure, whatever. Then later on in the period, Dupree had another good scoring chance with Craig Anderson, again, with one of the many, many fantastic saves he's made so far this season. He was looking, well, we're kind of getting used to him looking this good. I don't want to get used to it. I want to look at all these amazing saves and still consider them to be amazing. I don't want them to become, oh yeah, this is another one of his, I don't want them to become routine. I don't want me to start thinking that they're routine. Greening scored on a Spezza rebound after a beauty play at our own blue line getting the puck out. It was Milan Mikolic. I was watching it happen going, did he actually get that puck out? Oh, he did. All right. And then it was down. Spezza took the shot and Greening scored on the rebound. It was a beautiful play start to finish. Just fantastic. And it was one of the few really good sort of rushes in the entire game because a lot of it was scrambly, not broken, just not smooth. I guess it's still just early in the season, but it wasn't a very smooth-looking game. The shots were 13 for a total of 23 by Pittsburgh and 9 for a total of 21 by Ottawa. The third period, Condra almost had a goal. It was the one that was the puck was in behind Fleury, but it didn't quite cross the goal line enough. Couldn't see any white paint, so it wasn't a goal. But the Sens were really peppering Marc-Andre Fleury. Unlike the beginning of the game, they were just... There was a lot of intensity in the last 5 minutes or so. And the last 60 seconds or minute and a half, Anderson made a great save on a 3-on-1 to preserve the tie into overtime. Overtime, there wasn't a whole lot going on other than Silverberg had a breakaway, but it wasn't a really very good one.
But why wasn't that a penalty shot? He was totally being hooked up.
I was wondering the same thing. You know, he was just mauled on the way down there, but nope.
Didn't get the puck either. I don't get it.
Apparently
but it's Pittsburgh.
Not.
You can't. You got to be nice to them.
Well, they have Crosby, and I mean, you have to be gentle with him.
Yeah.
or he won't be allowed to play anymore. The shootout. There was a lot of scoring going on in the shootout, but it ended up that 3-2 in shootout goals. So Pittsburgh won the game. And I have to give Craig Anderson a lot of credit. After the game, he said, well, you know, we played really well, but I got to stop a puck in the shootout. That's my job kind of thing. He was matter of fact about it, and he was certainly taking the weight on it himself.
He took a lot of gruff after that game for letting in all three shots. But when you're looking at Neil Crosby and Malkin.
Look who's taking the shot for crying out loud.
Yeah,
exactly.
Don't go to a shootout against Pittsburgh. You're not going to walk away a winner very often.
That's not the team that you want to go against. And especially with Fleury in that too. And considering that they beat him twice.
But they got a point out of it. So, you know, it wasn't a particularly nice game to watch. Like, it wasn't a pretty game to watch, but we got a point out of it. So I really can't complain too much.
Yeah. And if Andy's going to let in three goals, I'd rather have him let in three goals in the shootout, especially against a team like Pittsburgh.
Yeah, absolutely. That's game five. Game six, Pan?
All right, Caps, it sends. So Alfie's back in, so that's great news. And now we've got Spezza out. K-Dog's out, Benoit's out, Weirkoch is back in, and Zibad's up. I think he probably came to visit his girlfriend over the AHL All-Star break, and apparently he brought up his gear just in case.
I heard he was planning on flying straight to St. John's because they're
flying. Oh,
yeah, the Sens are playing their first game back after the break is in St. John's, Newfoundland.
That was frigging great. Anyway, so shout out to his girlfriend. Take that as you will. Gonch is wearing the A again. Now, this was interesting. Regan makes it to the top line without – what was the top line in this?
I think this was the game where they were very fluid, wasn't it?
Well, it ended up being that way because, yeah, they wanted to try Regan out there. And one thing that I saw in one of McLean's interviews was that he mentioned that he didn't like Peter Regan on as a wing.
Yeah.
So that really called him out. And I think, granted, depending on things, that was probably kind of a last chance effort for Peter Regan. Anyway, so that's that. Now, Zubat ended up playing center that game too. He was on a line with O'Brien, which I thought was a little bit different because I think I prefer O'Brien as a center, but Zubat seems to be stronger as a wing. But we'll look at that later too. And his up and down game was just great. Anyway, so the first starts off. It was fast but really sloppy.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, that's okay. That's how I like it, though. Guy loses it to Volsky, and Brower scores on a 2-on-1. Borowiecki, in my opinion, takes a good penalty after getting beat by Ovechkin, so he just kind of took him down there. And shortly afterwards, Hendricks deflects a hard pass in the front of the net to beat a helpless Anderson. So that kind of covers up the first period. I think that was the first time that... Oh, no, it's still all in the first, so that's fine. So it's 2-1, I guess, or 2-0. Second period, it was absolutely brutal to watch. Up to the last minute when Zubat punches it up to Kondra, O'Brien gets himself a birthday present. It really was a brutal period, and thanks, Anderson, because otherwise without him, this would have been way, way out of grab.
At this point, you could tell there was a flu going through the dressing room. Just looked flat. They could not do anything.
Even in the Pittsburgh game, like Carlson did not look healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
Something there. I think he played better yesterday, but I don't think he was very good in the Caps game either. Third period comes by. McCulloch helps in the circle and backhands it past Neuvirth to tie the game right off the faceoff. That was a nice little shot there.
I'll take it.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Then the line changes happen. So Regan's off the top line. So when in doubt, you put the three guys together. So you've got Milo, Turris, and Alfie up. Now that found to show a lot more pressure, especially on the power play. This is something that kind of drove me nuts because the back referee caught Joel Ward with the high stick on Weirkoch, and Don Van Masterhoven was right next to the play.
And looking right at them.
Looking right at them, and he misses it. And of course, it's one of these old guys, so...
Well, you got to watch Ottawa. They're a dirty team.
Absolutely dirty. He's starving. He can bleed. Weirkoch can bleed on command.
Tim Peel told him.
Yeah. And so Carlson on the power play. Oh, this is great. So he just waits for the change while holding the puck on the half boards and sets up Gonchar with a cannon shot from the point.
Former Capital, Sergei Gonchar.
Yeah. So that took a very late lead in the game. And Gonchar, of course, rang the A. So he played a really, really strong game. That's two games in a row that he was really good there. So Anderson saves a friggin' day. So we should absolutely trade him.
Absolutely. His stock is high.
Bandstad looked really awesome. I wrote second star, but I think he was a first star. Got one assist, four shots, and 14:26 in ice time. La Tendresse looked awful.
Oh, did he ever?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Zibanejad was the best skater out there, I thought.
Yep.
That's why he got the first star.
Wasn't sick?
Yeah, he's coming from a dressing room that doesn't have the flu in it, so...
So, yeah, that may have been a very big part of it, but no, he's an extremely strong skater, and he's really good on his feet there.
He's hard to get off the puck, too.
Yeah, he is hard to get off it. Once he has it, he's very good at holding on to it. No, he's not small. I mean, he's not huge, but he's not small either, so, and he's strong. So once he's on it, he's got good hands to keep a hold of it.
And, so that's what I've got. The other thing that I had was... The Sens were really bad on the faceoffs without Spezza. Spezza tends to run around 60-70%.
Yeah, about that.
And without him there, that just hurts.
Oh, no, they were struggling. Well, that's one of the things I was noticing both in that game and the next one against the Habs, is they were struggling in the faceoff circle. And I'm guessing that's something they're going to be working on a lot in the next little while with a lot of people who would be taking them, whether they're centers or wingers who come in when a center gets waved out.
Yep. So that's what I've got for that game.
Excellent.
Yeah, you know, talking about Mika Zibanejad just for a second, you know, I think all of us, well, of course, being the first round draft, he got a lot of attention last season. And I think we all, after seeing him for a while, had this kind of image of him being very soft and he was 18 years old, right? And he was, you know, he looked like he had a little bit of growing up to do, right? And, you know, we kind of came up with a cool kind of theme song. And for those that haven't heard it yet, it's... But, you know, I'm thinking that we got to get rid of that kids thing, because he really kind of came out a monster there, and we got to go with the more heavy sounding thing.
Mika, Spinach,
so we'll see if we can get that into the goal scoring sound. We'll talk with the DJ. Think that would work?
Why not? Plays anything else, he gets asked.
Maybe in the open practices.
Oh, well, that's true. Hey, you played it. That's all that matters. All right, game 7. This is moving along well. This is good. Game 7 was Habs at the Sens. Spezza out. Gonchar out. Zibad was in for his second game. And Benoit, Wierkosz, and Borowiecki were all in. So half the blue liners were really Binghamton Senators.
And Gonchar finally plays well after 3 years. And
then he's out. But it was... Yeah, exactly. Bye-bye. I have to admit, I was a little bit concerned. I mean, we've all seen Benoit, Wierkosz, and Borowiecki play already. And they've played well when there's been any two of those three playing. We haven't really noticed any major mistakes or anything. But when I found out that all three of them were in and that Gonchar was out, I have to admit there was a little bit of a twinge of, okay, here we go.
Yeah, we should really trade for Rundblad now.
Yeah, that idea is... Yeah, comedy just doesn't stop on that one, does it? But they all played well, I thought. I thought they looked great. The first period, Smith got an early vicious cross-check from Colby Armstrong, no penalty, and about 10 seconds later... takes another heavy hit from White up along the boards, and that's when he dropped the gloves and just said, all right, I've had enough of this. And good tilt. You know, I'm not going to let you guys run around and start hammering onto people like me, so you want to do that, you got to answer for it.
Ryan White was a pain that whole game.
Well, that's what he does. Yep. That's what he does. Later on in the period, Plekanec scored on a deflection that Anderson really tried on, and it just kind of squeaked in. I think it went in off somebody else's foot, or maybe it was even off one of Anderson's old feet, but it was a rebound. It was all over the place. Went in. I felt sorry for him because he really tried to everything he could possibly do to keep it out, and it just didn't quite work. Shortly after that, Neil challenged Proust and settled his oats pretty well on that one. And after that, the Habs and their fans started to settle down. Like, they weren't running around and being idiots after... Neil put a beating down on him. So
was it settling down or shutting up?
Well, I wasn't in the building. You were.
They were shutting up.
But it was really... I noticed that they just weren't running around and being quite so reckless.
Ole, because
that comes later. That comes later. Great penalty kill work by Condra in the corner, and. Shot goes out to the point, and O'Brien pots a rebound with assists to Carlson and to Condra just at the end of the period to tie the game at 1, which was good to see. We certainly needed to get the game back on even strength. Second period started with a shift that was a minute 38 long for McCulloch, Torres, Alfie, Carlson, and Mathot. They just couldn't get out of the Ottawa zone, so it took them. They were on the ice for almost a minute 40. They were a little gassed after the end of that. But I have to say, as that period went on, I was really impressed with Chris Phillips. He was, anytime that there was a scrum in front of the net, he was going in and pushing people around, and he wasn't doing it with the, I'm giving you a little bit of a glove while I'm looking away. He was looking straight at them and pushing them backwards. Somebody lit a fire under him last night. I don't know why, or I don't know how, but I was really, really impressed to see that. Power play was there was an interesting power play set up at one point. It was Zibanejad, Greening, and O'Brien on the ice with Carlson and Benoit, which I thought was an interesting makeup.
Why not? That line's been great.
Well, I found the power plays yesterday. They were just weird.
They were. But that line was...
It was the second line was also like Smith and Neal. I didn't like that.
Yeah, it was the line combinations were all over the place. I just thought that was a really, like, that was the, at the beginning of the power play, that was the line that was sent out, and I looked at it and went, okay, Coach McLean, I trust you. You've done very well so far, so I'm not going to doubt you on this one. And Carlson hit a post on that one, but nobody scored on it. And at the end of the power play, that's when it was Colby Armstrong who was in the box, gets out of the box and breaks into the send zone on a 2-on-1. And let a shot go, and Craig Anderson was just so square, looking right at him, and there was no rebound. It was hits him, puck hits the ice, and he dropped and caught and covered it. And he made, and again, he's just looking at it going, there's the shot, it's on the ice, I got it, next, whistle, let's keep going. He just looked really so cool about the whole thing. Very casual. Exactly. Little while later, Alfie hit a post, and that was the one that everybody thought it was a goal. Actually, I think it was the crossbar. That it went off, and everybody thought it was a goal, but it wasn't, unfortunately. Moments later, it was it was White who took the double minor for roughing and then for unsportsmanlike. Now, was he just the unsportsmanlike? Was it he was getting chirping. Lippy with the ref?
Absolutely. Okay.
That's what I thought. I was too busy writing everything down at the time to figure out exactly what it was. And seconds into the first penalty, the Golden God scores with assists to Weir, Kosh, and Turris. Just that was the. That
Cardinal,
was the one that
Cardinal,
was.
Card.
That was a beautiful day when he finally scored.
you need more enthusiasm when you say Golden God.
Golden God.
The Golden God!
That's somebody else's shtick. I don't want to steal their shtick.
Oh, we're good at that, though. We like to steal sticks.
I suppose we steal it from everybody. Fair enough. But it was that was the one. That was the. Budaj was sort of looking over at the ref when the puck was dropped. He wasn't set and everything was a bit scrambly and then in it went. It was a very weird goal, but hey, I'll take it. Anything that breaks up a tie is good with me, especially if we're the ones scoring it. But that was only the first of the two penalties, so the power play continued, and just as it was about to expire was when Zibanejad scored. Just with seconds left in that power play to make it 3-1.
First NHL goal.
First NHL goal, and he was happy about it too. But it was a cannon of a shot that he just let go. It was beautiful. And before the period was out, we get another goal from the big rig with assist to Smith and Greening. And here's a neat little thing: I noticed on Twitter that they were talking about the fact that whenever Chris Phillips scores, it's a free round for everybody who's actually at the restaurant.
I don't know if that's true or if the people are just trying to get free drinks.
Well, one of them was from the big rig boss.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
He didn't deny it.
No. What a way to drum up business. I mean, everyone wants to go there for a free drink if Chris Phillips scores. Well, he doesn't score all that often, folks.
But when he does, it's in the books. Like, they exactly. should just stop the game right there. Oh, that's it. Phillips scored.
Yeah.
Go home, guys.
You know what's great? He's on pace for 14 goals.
We can take that. Especially if Gonchar is out for any period of time.
Yeah.
Near the end of the period, Latendresse threw a big hit. I didn't catch who it was that he threw it at, but he threw a big hit at somebody who had just taken a semi-cheap shot at Regan. I didn't quite catch who it was, but he just pounded on them. Just
he did play quite physical. It's also against Montreal, but...
He did. And just later, just near the end of the period, there was a a moment where the puck had gone out of the zone, but only barely, and they were trying to bring it back in, but he was going to be offside. So instead of trying to skate out of the zone, because he was right next to the bench, he leapt onto the bench. So that somebody else who was on the outside of the blue line could jump on. And it was like, okay, that's a pretty heads-up play. I was impressed. On to the third period. Just get through this game quickly. There was a moment early in the period where they thought it was a goal, but it was waved off immediately, drew a really high stick. I was happy to see that because I was looking at it going, he's holding his stick almost vertically straight up. You'd better call that off, but they did. That was good. There was also a big hit by Eric Cole on Borowiecki, but Borowiecki just bounced right back up and kept playing because, I mean, he's used to throwing them, so he can take a hit for sure. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but, man, he throws heavy, heavy checks. They're really quite impressive to see. Anderson made a huge save on Prost. That was the one where he made the save with just diving over and using the paddle of the stick.
Yeah, Mrs. So, Prost didn't like that at all.
No, she didn't like that one. And that was the one that some system somewhere said it was a goal.
Yeah. And,
because it came up on, it was on Game Center. I have the ESPN Score Center app on my phone. And it came up telling me that it had been a goal. And I'm like, there was no goal. And it was also a buddy of mine got an email at the end of the game, and it was still considering it a goal. An email from some I think it's NHL.com sends out game summaries, and it was still showing as a goal in the middle of, in that game. So obviously there's a Habs fan around there somewhere. Later on in the period, Benoit made a great sliding across the move to it wasn't quite a poke check, but it was really to take away the cross a shot across on a 2-on-1. To save the shot and even to save a shot on net. It was a really, really heads-up play by a guy who's... I mean, I know he's an AHL veteran, doesn't have a lot of time in the NHL, but he looked really good. And then Anderson robbed Prost again, twice in the same period. Just insanity. Just looking at him going, yeah, I own you. That's fine. With just about 5 minutes left in the clock, the Senators were skating literally from one end of the ice to the other, back and forth. I think I did it twice, keeping the puck to themselves. Was the ultimate in puck control to control the pace of the game because Montreal can't make a play with it if they don't have it. I was just watching it going, that's great. I love this. Neil scored on the wraparound, and that was just when the fans started leaving, and I was really happy. I was really, really happy to hear all the Sens fans serenading the Habs fans with ole, ole, ole as they were all walking out because the TV was showing all these people walking up the aisles, and they were all wearing Camilleri, Price, Subban. They were all Habs jerseys that were leaving.
That was fun.
Oh, it was great.
That was a lot of fun to be there.
I wish I'd been there for that because that was a lot of fun to watch.
Did the RSU start that one?
Well, I sit in 319, so everything that I hear is either RSU or Matt.
I heard Matt was quiet this game.
Oh, my God.
So make your final 5-1 and make it 48-11-4 for the Senators when the big rig scores in a game.
That's awesome. Now, one thing that I thought was an absolute mistake on Montreal's part was because, granted, yeah, they had back-to-back games. Price really should have played this one.
Well, who had they? They played.
They played Winnipeg the night before.
Oh, Winnipeg. But that was a home game. they have to have Price at home.
Do you have to? Because this was a big game, and it can be a very significant game.
This is Montreal. You have to have Carey Price playing at home this early in the season? I think so. That's a marketing question, not a coaching question.
Well, if you want to market or win, there's two different things. Just ask the Leafs.
Well, point taken.
What's win? What's this win you speak of?
Yeah, so I've got a touch of math for you guys if you want.
You got Ooh. Some math?
Yeah. So a couple of things that we looked at, actually, because just mentioned Chris Phillips on pace for 14 goals. He's already got 2 in 7 games. Do you know what his highest goals for a full year were? He's got this number twice.
No idea.
8.
Nice.
His highest goal total was 8. That's an 09-10 and 06-07. So you got the cup year and I believe the president's cup year. So those were on really good teams, and he had the full 82 games to play on. So something special about this year. I can already feel it, and we're about 10% done. So it's a good stick to measure to. Zibanejad on his first game was 2-for-6 on the faceoffs, and then 2-for-10 on the second.
Oof.
Okay, so that's got some work to be done. To say the least.
Maybe that's why they were putting him on a line with O'Brien, because even if he's playing the center, O'Brien can take the face off. And if O'Brien's
getting waved out. No, he was always taking them, though.
Was he? Or was he just getting waved in after O'Brien was getting waved out?
Yeah, I thought he was getting waved in.
Zibanejad was getting waved in?
Yeah.
Oh, I always saw him line up, because he lines up really weird, too. He's almost in the split sometimes.
Yeah, it's really low.
Yeah, look for it next game, because it's just odd to watch, and I don't know if his balance is off, and at this level, the other guy's reactions are that much better. But I don't know.
I'll have to watch that. I thought I'd seen him being waved out, but I may be confusing games. No worry. So, all in all, I'd say the last three games, pretty good. 5 out of 6 points. A little scrambly, a little rusty at times, but Anderson is looking just, and I have to admit, this is the first time I've actually heard any major sports media talk about Craig Anderson, and they were talking about him on TSN, on SportsCenter, as well as on Sportsnet. They're actually talking about Craig Anderson being, you know, a bona fide number one goalie, not just, oh, he's some guy who plays in Ottawa and they traded for him, but he's not all that good.
Won a playoff series yet.
Yeah, whatever. The Toronto Maple Leafs haven't been in the playoffs in 8 years. They still talk a lot about them.
Yeah, exactly.
Never mind winning a playoff series.
They're always looking at the next goalie that they want to get. Yeah, I actually had my eye on Anderson before the year of hell, because I knew that he was a pending UFA and that things weren't working out in Colorado. And watching him out in Florida, things like that, I thought there was a lot of opportunity for him. So,
well,
very happy with him.
Exactly. Absolutely.
It's a great start. We have 11 points out of a possible 14 in 7 games. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
I'm not complaining. I didn't expect them to be this good, to be honest. I don't think anybody did. I'm not complaining. And I hope it continues.
But things are going to get pretty interesting now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, with Spezza being out indefinitely with a herniated disc, and I've been hearing a lot of different. I did listen to the news conference this morning, and I thought Brian Murray played it very well, because he was asked twice, you know, how long is he going to be out for? And I think the second one, you could almost hear him looking at the guy, giving him a bit of the stink eye, going, "Listen, okay, I said it's indefinite, and I said it's indefinite because I don't know. If I said 6 to 8 weeks, you'll be here." At 6 weeks plus a day going, where is he? Where is he? Where is he? He said he'd be back in 6 weeks. So I'm not saying that.
We've got to cut him open, put his bones back into place. I don't know how long that's going to take to really recover.
Compare that to a Brian Burke interview with the media.
He's
completely the opposite.
Yeah. I was just laughing at the, you know, he's being so straightforward and honest that it's almost, I mean, you'd think that the media here would be used to that by now. And not try and push the issue with some sort of stupidity, but I guess somebody felt like it. I don't
like the news that he's injured, but I think this is the best thing that could happen to the Senators right now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that he's having the surgery, because there is the possibility of him playing with this. You know, you can do a lot of, not rehab, but do a lot of physiotherapy and play through it until the end of the year and then have the surgery in the off season. I'd rather he have it now. Because this just means another injury is waiting to happen, which could be worse.
And how detrimental will that be long-term for him?
Exactly.
Like, we had Alfie a couple years ago play when his back hurt so much that he couldn't even feel his leg.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's much better to get it done now. Much better.
This is what a lot of Sens fans have been dreaming for. Face it, you know, Shredder on the Sens Underground said it, and you've heard it over and over again. The Sens cannot win the cup with Spezza on the team. He is not captain material. He is he's a liability out there defensively, and it's about time this is going to – you watch. Things are going to turn up. This is going to be the best thing that happened to the Senators.
You got to stop huffing chemicals.
I don't know if you're being sarcastic or not, Canuck.
I really hope you are.
Are you kidding me? Come on. This guy, we have sat here and listened and said it ourselves that he keeps turning the puck over, especially in key playoff games. Okay, sure, he puts up 90 points during the season. Maybe you need him to get to the playoffs, but he is a defensive liability. We keep complaining about the same thing over and over and over again. He does not learn, and it is about time that he gets off the team and we can move on.
Right. Okay. We'll move on. That's a great idea.
I don't know if you're being sarcastic. Like, you need the goals. Well, just looked at, you need the faceoffs because he's been good at that. If you've got the goaltender that can actually stop the puck from the turnovers, that's one thing.
He should have been traded years ago. This is going to be the best thing. Okay guys, sorry, okay. I can't do it. I can't play the antagonist here.
You did pretty well at it. I got to give you full marks on it.
I really wasn't sure what was going on. So you know what? Get rid of Spezza, bring Kuba back, and we're fine.
Yeah.
All right, Kuba, baby.
And maybe we should trade for Brian Elliott too.
No, I thought I could keep that up all episode, but no, I can't.
That's because I wasn't going to move on.
I'll try that, Ned. I'll try and find something controversial. I just couldn't pull that one off because I'd be laughing. Geez. He did much better than I would have, that's for sure.
I think this is a huge blow. I mean, it's
an opinion, but yeah. Your opinion was wrong there.
This is great. The fact that we have a young team and we have some depth and we're not like hitting the panic button. What do we do now? I'm making some stupid trade. But this is big in my opinion. I think this means that we, you know, look at the standings right now. We're, you know, what, fourth or maybe first, but depending on, I think Buffalo won tonight. But let's just say, you know, before tonight, we were fourth by definition in the conference. And we thought maybe we could hang out up there. I think we're now looking at 9 or 10 and just dreaming of slipping into that 8 if we're lucky. I hope I'm wrong, but I think they'll continue to play exciting hockey. It's going to be like last season where I think all we can ask is that they make the games entertaining. But I think without him, I think we're toast. I don't think we're winning in the playoffs without him and players like Jared Cowan. But maybe he comes back. I mean, that would be awesome. If he comes back, you know, right in time for the playoffs.
Well, it's 12 weeks until the end of the season. And this surgery, normally, they were talking about
that's
it on the radio.
Yeah,
that's right. And after the news conference, they were talking about it on the radio. And this surgery, the average is 6 to 8 weeks. Sometimes, you know.
That's 2 months.
Sometimes 10. That's 2 months. So there certainly is the opportunity to have him back. Now, he may be back in a bit rusty, but I think Jason York was describing the surgery. He's had something similar, I think. And you have the surgery and you rest completely for about a week to 10 days. And after that, you can start your rehab work. But it's really important that your rehab work and physiotherapy afterwards is limited very specifically so that you don't overdo it. Because overdoing it is the number one reason why people have to have this surgery twice. Because they try and go too far, too fast. And this is not just for athletes. This is for anybody who has this surgery. That if you don't take the time to let it heal and you try and go too far, too quickly, you're going to have it done again.
I'd rather have this than him playing through pain and not being himself.
Oh, absolutely. This way he can go back to playing the way he was.
Yeah.
And the way that he can. So I'm all for it. And we do have depth. I mean, it's none of them are Jason Spezza. I mean, even fourth in points in the entire league last year. But we do have, it's not like a couple of years ago we're looking around going, who do we sign to play center?
We've been scoring by committee too. So it's not like we're relying on just Jason Spezza to score.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, it's going to hurt us. But I think this means Zibanejad's probably here to stay unless he totally mucks it up. So
could well be. Exactly. And it's an opportunity for him.
Yeah.
Zibanejad's got to be the key in this.
Yep.
Because if Regan, he plays too, well, and at the level that he could play, Because don't forget, we take this guy in front of Sean Couturier. That could be the difference maker right there. Because you can't just leave it to Turris, because then he'll just get covered defensively and he'll shut down.
Yeah, but I mean, Zibanejad and Couturier aren't the same player, because Couturier is a defensive liability. He's a scorer, but he's not particularly good defensively, where Zibad is. So I won't expect him to put up the same numbers, but if he can contribute on a regular basis in the whole scoring by committee thing, I'll be okay with that.
Well, let's just say the leash is going to be really long with these guys, because it has to be. I mean, this is what we got. So here you go, guys. It's your chance.
I was going to say, the forwards are going to be rather like the blue line this year. I mean, the blue line, we had three Binghamton Senators playing in the last game. I mean, Lundin's going to come back eventually, so probably at least one of them will go back down to Bingo, provided we don't have any other injuries. But, you know, we'll just rotate people through and see what works.
And keep Anderson away from the chicken. I saw him tweet about having a chicken cacciatore and no
chicken
knives.
Chicken farm.
Yeah.
I laughed when he tweeted that. I thought that was priceless.
He's got a great sense of humor, but seriously, stay away from the kitchen.
Yeah.
Going back to these guys. Okay. That's kind of creepy, because I know you just want to be in his house because you'll fit in all his clothes.
And pictures.
Maybe confuse the wife a bit.
Is he married now?
Yep.
Yeah,
I believe so. Anyway. No, but going back to these D-men, have you had any issue with any of them?
No.
I know Borowiecki, granted we're buddies now, but Borowiecki's gotten caught a couple of times on missing a play or something like that, but he's always come back and he's taken penalties for it from time to time.
Well, he's got a reputation in the league, right?
Clearly.
Well, yeah. When Novetchkin beats him, like, he just grabbed him and brought him down, but that's exactly what you want to do against Ovechkin. You can't let him break in.
But you see energy and passion from Borowiecki, and he gets the fans going. So, you know, maybe you can excuse a little bit of the gaffes. I've
seen him do this twice, where there's a scrum in front of the net, and he just jumps after the whistle, and he jumps into the play. So it brings the face-off outside.
Well, I'm okay with that. Oh, we mean outside the offensive zone, not our defensive. What?
I think the coach will get on that, but I don't know.
I'm okay with him. I really am. I mean, we've seen gaffes by everybody. Nobody's played a gaffe-free game yet, and they haven't looked out of place. So I'm all for, you know, we can keep rotating them at least for now and see what happens. What are you guys thinking about Silverberg? There was a lot of fanfare when he first got here, and I have to admit, after watching six games, I haven't seen a whole lot. Nothing bad, just pretty nondescript. Nothing particularly working. Nothing impressive, at least. What do you think?
I don't think he's screwed up, but you got to get him going. He's offensive. You got to get him doing something. So I think it might be more power play time. So when I was mentioning, like, Zach Smith and Chris Neal are on the power play, maybe get him up there. He's a big body too.
Yeah, that could work. I'm wondering if it's just a change of, I mean, he started really slowly in Binghamton this season. And I mean, that was an adjustment from big ice to very small, because Binghamton's ice surface is smaller than Ottawa's. And, I mean, definitely different pace of game, and it took him a little while to get used to that, and then he started playing. He was a better contributor, I guess you could say. And I'm wondering if he's having the same thing moving from the AHL to the NHL. He's just having trouble adjusting to the speed of the game and the quality of the opposition. And it'll take him a little while to find his niche, and then he can get himself going. So I like the idea of putting him on a power play with Neil and, was it Greening you said?
Well, Smith was with him. I want to take one of those guys off that line. This is not enough skill.
I'm perfectly fine with him. I don't see...
He's not producing.
He's not producing, I agree. But he seems to be aware. He doesn't seem to be out of position. I think it's just going to be a matter of time. It's going to take him a few games, and then he'll start showing up.
Yeah, I don't know. I might send him down if he's on a two-way, and I'm pretty sure he is.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, because we need we got abundance of forwards now, right? With Spezza out.
Well, I've always got a sitting.
Well, he's got at least one sitting, and Binghamton can certainly use him because they've got injuries of their own to deal with right now. Because Hoffman's out with a broken finger, and Stone's out with a broken collarbone.
So, I'm being selfish here. I want to see him succeed here in Ottawa.
Oh yeah, I don't. I am not in any rush to send him down.
Remember the he's a good puck possession guy, and I think we're going to need him. It'd be interesting to see what happens over the next week, but I'm really hoping he turns a page.
Well, once the line combinations start to settle down a little bit, because I'm sure that Coach McLean will be juggling them quite a bit, trying to find the right chemistry with Spezza being out and Turris moving up and all that sort of thing. So it's going to take a little while for everything to settle down a little bit. So I'm happy to leave him up here for now. I don't have any qualms like it. He's not playing badly. He's just not being particularly noticeable. Like, he's not doing anything that is really showing up. It's kind of like a defenseman. He's not screwing up, so I'm not noticing him. But he's also not scoring.
When he's supposed to be your first line guy.
Exactly.
He's not getting anything.
That's where the problem comes in. Well, speaking of, how about La Tendresse? Second line guy, not doing a whole lot.
To have a crickets. Well,
Canuck, I think you were right to do it last week when we used him for the intro, because I think you're right, because I don't see him being here very long.
Wow.
He played a lot more physical against Montreal, but he didn't really contribute much, and he seemed to be way down on the lineup too.
It seems like he's struggling to get up to speed, and I mean, he's only played, 27 games in two seasons? So yeah. I'm guessing that there's... not trepidation, but he's just trying to, get used to being out there. I mean, he's out there, but he's not really comfortable being out there yet.
Oh, come on. Is he just going to suddenly double his speed with a few games under his belt?
I don't think he's going to be the fastest guy, but he's got good hands when they're working.
He's good in practice. Yeah. Where have you heard this before?
I'm not calling him a Kovalev just because they both came to us from Montreal. Well, via Minnesota.
Well, I am.
No, I think with Kovalev, See, you got me doing it. With La Tendresse, though, there isn't much invested in him.
No.
So if he ends up on the third, fourth line, I don't really care. I just don't want him taking a development spot.
Can we trade him to Toronto for a pick or something?
First overall?
Sure. Okay, if you must. Maybe, I don't know.
Two firsts.
Maybe this year and next year.
He could probably still be useful, but my hopes for him have dwindled quite quickly.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
I didn't have a whole lot to begin with, I'm sure the right niche will be found for him, and he'll be able to contribute at some level, but it's the yearly reclamation project, right? Give it a try, see what happens. It's not like he's on a long-term contract or anything.
You know what? Because we don't have the voting buttons. I want emails on La Tendresse.
Well, we'll see what people turn up then. We'll see. I don't think we have to say anything about Anderson this week. Anybody who still wants to trade him needs to have their head examined. I mean, there'd be a good market for him. But
you tank the season.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to throw this out here. And no, I don't want to do this, but I just thought of it. And it's interesting.
Okay.
Would you trade, we started this season, we talked about, we had the three goaltenders, and you know how quick we were to dispense with Anderson at the beginning of the season. We want Robin Leonard, he's our future. We've seen how amazing Anderson's playing right now. No, I don't want to get rid of it, but would you trade Anderson, now with the Spezza situation, straight up for a legit number one center from another team? I don't know. Let's say like a Stamkos.
No, that's untouchable. That'd be ridiculous.
If it was a legitimate number one center.
The only one that I can think of, and you're right there, maybe like Cavalier because the contract's bad.
I was going to say, that's a bad contract. I was going to say I would do it if it was a legitimate bona fide number one center with term, not 8 years worth. Maybe with, say, 2 or 3 years worth of term. But then if we do that, what do we do with them next year? Because we have Turris and Spezza back. What do we do with that number one center that we're trading away Craig Anderson for? I don't want to do it for a rental.
Now we got multi-team. Now we got multi-lines. Wow.
I can't think of anyone that would really fit that. The quick fix, I'm thinking, is Getzlaff.
But if we were to do it for Getzlaff, I want a first-round pick to come with it because he'll be gone.
Well, yeah, I don't – to solve the team, I don't think Anderson for Getzlaff would not be smart.
No way.
No.
No, Bishop for Getzlaff.
But a Bishop – yep. No. Hey, why not?
Granted, Anaheim wouldn't make that trade.
You've got your own Tiller, so what the hell –
We'll throw in LaTondres. He's good in practice.
And an eighth round pick. We'll throw in an eighth round pick and a bag of pucks. Yeah. No, he's not going anywhere, and I'm just fine with that. I'm just fine with that. Now, we have a special guest to join us right now. We have Senatron, which some folks may have seen at Ottawa Senators home games. We got him. We got an interview with him, so... Canuck, can you get him on the line for us?
Let's bring him on here. All right. On the line with us tonight, we have the one and only Senatron.
Good evening.
Thanks, Senatron, for coming on our episode. Now, I first saw you last season during the playoffs. I was at Game 4, home game 2 against the New York Rangers, and I looked over and look at that, and it says Senatron. And again, the first time I'd seen you was then, but can you tell us, like, who is Senatron? Where does he come from? And how long have you been in the city?
Senatron has been around for a while. My essence was first locked into the ice of the Scotiabank Place one evening after a meteor shower. I lay dormant for several years, accumulating the desire and the essence of the Ottawa Senators. Merging with the only technology available, the Zamboni, Senatron was given basic form, and I began to grow. The blood and the sweat and the tears of the many Senators' victories, and the cries and the cheers of fans incubated me and allowed me to continue to grow until one fateful day in October of 2011, I appeared during the match against the Ottawa's greatest foes, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Wow, that's an epic story. So what kind of reception have you had here in Ottawa?
It's been pretty epic. Everybody here seems to really appreciate the Senatron. The energy levels is high, even from the opposing team fans. So it's been pretty awesome. Been getting media attention from CBC and CTV and The Sun, Citizen, all over the place.
Great. Now... I've seen you around town too, and also I think you were downtown a bit during the playoffs last year too, which was really neat to see you just walking in the street. Now, does Senatron require any special arrangements to go to the games, or have you ever had any troubles with any of the ushers?
No, the ushers have been pretty fantastic, actually. They actually helped me to return home to Scotiabank Place. I've made arrangements with the Senators, so they invite me in because, well, it's home. So I'm allowed to roam freely, more or less. So there's no problems with me sitting in the seats because, well, I wouldn't sit in one anyway. Generally, I like to roam the concourse and the upper levels, the far upper levels where the standing room is.
Gotcha. Now, what can we expect to see more of Senatron this season?
Well, due to some previous obligations, what with having offspring and two Senatots to train and develop for future appearances, I'm limited to one game a month. So my next appearance will be against the Toronto Maple Leafs again on February 23rd.
Right on.
Excellent. Now, during the lockout, I know that there were a lot of people that were laid off and they weren't around Scotiabank Place. I was actually following a Twitter account for a little while about an unemployed Spartacat. So what was Senatron doing during the lockout?
What any fantastic cyborg would do. Upgrades, software, hardware, additional training and development, as well as developing and training the new Senatots.
So I can't help but notice the name Senatron and being a reference to that famous Hollywood movie Transformers. Now, maybe we should ask, are you an Autobot or a Decepticon, or do we need to worry about other robots in the area?
I'm not really related to them, though Perhaps maybe a distant cousin, perhaps. The only other robot that I've seen is only a minor threat. He's underpowered and rooted in Toronto Maple Leafs Iron Man. He seems to be currently trapped there, though, as the current state of his power source, you know, his team winning, is pretty low. So it appears that he's going to be trapped in the megacity for quite a while.
Isn't that just a vacuum cleaner? I hear the Leafs suck down there.
Very much could be.
Well, great, Senatron. Awesome having you on, and thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule training the Senatots.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you at the upcoming Leafs game.
Hoo-ah! Make some noise!
A couple of quick things to talk about around the league, just to get away from the Senators for a couple of minutes. The big name RFAs, a couple have been signed. One of them is still outstanding. Jamie Benn signed with Dallas for a 5-year contract. But the one that's probably in the media and on people's thoughts more than everything else is PK Subban signing in Montreal, signing only 2-year deal, which is the team was holding. Apparently, the team was holding the line on that, saying, "No, we're not signing long term. It's 2 years. It's 2 years. It's 2 years. It's 2 years." And they managed to pull it off. Just under $6 million for the deal, but $2 million in the first year and $3.85 in the second, which I thought was pretty crafty, because this is the year that's shortened anyway. So if you made them equal, he would lose way more salary if the 2 years were the same money. And it also, Pan, you can correct me, this is some math stuff. If they have to qualify offer him, it's based on the last year that he's been paid. So 3.85 for the second year of this 2-year deal is what his qualifying offer would be based on. Is that right?
I don't know the exact rules for that, but yeah, it's got to be an improvement on that. And I think it's only like a 10% to qualify, 10% increase or something like that.
Okay.
And these are old rules that I'm looking at.
Cost of living increase.
Well, there was a lot of talk about PK Subban and how much he was worth and how long his contract should be. And there was a lot of talk that he was looking for a lot of money for a long term. Not quite Erik Karlsson level, but up there. And what are your thoughts on this? Mine are, I don't think he's proven that he's worth Erik Karlsson money yet.
He's got to earn it.
Yeah. Not nearly has he proven that.
You just said he wasn't near the Erik Karlsson money.
Well, that's what
I would say he's worth about $3.85 a year.
Yeah, I'd say $3 million or so. Yeah,
he's a corner piece behind Carey Price.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's hurting him now is probably, and granted, I think Montreal's doing a terrible job in regards to their rebuild, but why wouldn't you want to lock this guy up?
Is he even going to want to stay now?
That's the thing, because now you're letting him get another 2 years of experience, get that much closer to a UFA status. You might have to pay him $5 million now instead of $4.5 million.
Maybe, or if he doesn't pan out,
he'll pan out.
I mean, I get it from the Montreal perspective. They had the two Albatross contracts. Gionta they bought out, and who's the other one?
Yeah, Gomez is gone.
Gomez.
Gionta's still there. Gomez is gone. They also still have Kaberle for a number of years.
I don't think it's that long, but Rene Bork's the bad one.
Yeah, that's right.
I understand they didn't want to sign another big contract on potential. I get that. So I think they had the right approach, you know, sign him for something mid-range, but...
He's a real deal.
I think so.
Probably his attitude, but... Dude,
he's young.
Where saw you 23 years old?
Yeah, I know. Where was Emery at that age? Where's Leonard younger than that? You know, like they're going to mature. He's certainly well liked by the fans.
Yeah, apparently he's not too well liked by his teammates.
Markov.
Well, how long is Markov going to play before he gets hurt again, though?
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing really well to start this year, but.
And I've got him on my hockey pole because a robot drafted him, so I'm just going to deal with it.
He's one massive hit away from another injury. One what? Big hit on him, and, you know, who knows? Anyway, I just thought I'd ask.
You know, it's really interesting because now Subban's got 2 years left. Markov's got 2 years left, then falls to UFA. Kaberle's got 2 years left, then he falls to UFA. Emlyn's got 2 years left, then he falls to UFA. Diaz has 2 years left, and he falls to UFA.
This happened to Montreal just a few years ago. They had half, like three quarters of the dressing room were free agents.
Yeah.
So they've got Josh Georges for long-term, and then Subban as an RFA.
Wow.
So the thing is, when you're looking at a laddering strategy so that you don't kill your team, they've got four guys gone in the same year. And I don't think any of them will come back. Well, maybe Diaz and Emlyn, but Kaberle and, no, Kaberle, who cares? But
well, they won't want Kaberle back. He was a stopgap that they took and wished they hadn't. But so,
I don't know. I think that's bad laddering by the team, where if you could have signed Subban to even 7 years, who cares?
Leton Dress was a hit there. Do they want him back?
You just want to trade everybody today. You want to get rid of everyone.
Trade them all.
Trade them all. Ryan O'Reilly in Colorado hasn't been signed yet. That's the other one I was kind of keeping my eye on because Colorado's not doing very well. They need him, but I haven't figured out exactly I haven't heard what the problem is on why they haven't signed him yet. Just been kind of quiet. Meanwhile, on the other side of the coin, we got UFAs like Redden and Gomez, who were the two that were bought out and have both re-signed for just above league minimum, it seems. They're both playing
800,
for
900,000, I think.
Yeah, under $1 million each. But I mean, they also have the buyouts going on, so it's not the end of the world for either one of them. Redden's doing quite well in St. Louis.
Yep. And, you know, that's one thing I think with Redden, good for him. It seems that he's fought in all of his demons and won. For whatever those demons are, stipulated or not. But he didn't go and sulk in the minors, so that was a key.
Yeah,
kept his high spirits and made him the captain down there. He's playing with, what's his face from St. Louis?
I can't remember who he's playing with, but he's
not Pietrangelo. Is it Pietrangelo?
It is Pietrangelo, yeah, that's it.
So that's a good pairing on the top pair, too. So good for him. I think he's actually got a really good chance at winning the Masterson Trophy this year.
Well, and I mean, good on him. He's been through a lot. He stayed positive. I mean, it's not that he was a terrible hockey player. He would just cost too much for what he was able to produce. So getting a chance. And I mean, I have to applaud both the Montreal Canadiens and the New York Rangers for doing this, for buying them out and giving both Gomez and Redden a chance to play somewhere else. Rather than leaving. I mean, it's economically it's good for them, but it's also the right thing to do.
Well, I give the league credit for that because both teams told them to stay home. It's a douchebag move.
Well, they told them to stay home because they didn't want to pay them, but they got the opportunity to buy them out, so they did. It kind of goes both ways.
I wouldn't give the teams too much credit on that. But you know what? It'd be easy to just say, screw it, I'm packing it up, or I'm just going to coast and get my $6 million a year.
And he didn't, for sure. What do you... I mean, at this time, what are we, 7 games into the season now? Yeah, 7-8 games in. At this time, at the beginning of last season, Brendan Shanahan was being heard from, it seemed like, almost daily. There was the big crackdown. I mean, it was we didn't have a preseason this year, but even during the preseason last year, exhibition games, he was cracking down on people and suspending them for what was deemed to be an infraction and a violation of player safety rules. We've only had two so far this year, a 1-game and a 2-game. That's it. And it seems, now I'm wondering, what do you think? Is it that he's still on a really short leash, or is it the players are actually playing smarter than they used to?
Have you heard of anything big yet? I haven't.
I haven't either.
Exactly. There haven't been these massive, blatant violations of the rules.
It'll happen. There'll be something soon. We'll be talking about
it. Torres is coming back in a couple of days, so.
Didn't he have like 23 games to sit out?
Yeah, but because the Coyotes made it so far, that ate most of the days.
Oh, they counted the playoff games?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, well. Joy. Well, at least Hossa's playing again. All right. Well, I just wanted to ask your opinion on that. We got something more important to talk about, though.
Oh, before, Way though, more important. Cardinal, just before we end our Around the League segment. Just want to say kudos to the Ottawa Senators organization for some of the nice promos they're doing. Now, I haven't had a chance to take advantage of it, but one I know some people have is the, you know, buy one adult ticket, and I think it's 14 or under, you get a free ticket to take them with as well.
Yep.
You know, that's a pretty good deal. Now, I looked it up, and a lot of the games were actually weekday nights, which I don't know how friendly that is for families with young children, but I'm thinking about that, and how are they going to police that, though? Isn't that basically like a buy one, get one free? You know, you're going to get two of these tickets and probably print them at home. And, you know, the usher is scanning them as you're walking in, you know, and ding, 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 ding. Are they really going to have the chance to check? You know, maybe the ticket does say child, but, I mean, they're just going to scan it and pass along. And I don't know, like, how does that not just turn into a buy one, get one free scenario?
Yeah, we probably shouldn't be broadcasting this, but
is there an issue,
Papa? Yeah, because back in the day, I used to get the Sens Rush emails. I don't know, Canuck, you might have received those too.
No.
What year was this? This was like 2001, 2002, where if the game didn't sell enough tickets, I signed up for these through their email distribution, and it was any students would get tickets. Like, it'd be like the day of that they would announce it. Third bowl for $16.
Not bad.
It's called, I think it was Sens Rush or Student Rush.
Because students can get out there pretty fast, right?
Well, you know, you jump on the bus, so you're fine, and you know that these kids will be drinking like crazy, right?
Yeah.
So they'll make their money back on concessions. But I was able to buy these tickets and bring like my friend's dad so he can get a ride. And and even at that, so you'd have like a 6-year-old with a student ticket. And even at the end, if they say anything, it's just like, well, I'm a master's student.
Is there an issue,
Papa? Or just do that. So you want some little metal bank anyways. Because I think with the print at home was the difference. But if you went to the pickup wicket, you had to show your student status or student card.
Well, sure, yeah.
But you're printing it at home, and you're right, because these guys don't have time.
Oh, no, they're trying to scan people and get them through as quickly as possible, unless there's something really obvious on the printed home ticket says, you know, where's, and they, if they print out every single one of them saying, where's the child? So they look around, oh, there are two adults here. Where's the under 14-year-old? Yeah. I don't know.
Is it buy one, get one half, or get one free?
It's buy one, the 14 and under gets it free. So it's buy one, get one free.
Okay. That's pretty much the same as 50% off. Then.
So, Pan, you want to be my kid next time?
You nice. Just need to call your daddy.
I'm going to move on now, gentlemen.
Please do.
Emails?
Yes. In our last episode, we sent out a plea for email because we haven't been getting much, and it is actually a lot of fun, and it might be entertaining as we read them. But it is a lot of fun to hear from the folks out there that are listening, as well as get questions or thoughts that gives us something to talk about, because it means I don't have to come up with as much to put into a show outline. So, we have email to talk about. Pan, you want to read the first one?
Sure. All right. So this is from Gabrielle. I don't know what the last name is. It's too many letters. Anyway, so here we go. Gabrielle's obviously her first winner from the SCU contest, and also now a contributor on the forums, and we're quite active on Twitter, so that's always fun. Here we go. So the subject line, all right, I'm emailing you. So I heard – oh, God, I can't read – so I heard something interesting this past week that has been bothering me ever since. I was talking to a friend who's a Leafs fan. He's tolerable and not usually as ridiculous as most Leaf fans. And he said something like, as long as the Sens have Alfie, I'll never respect them because Alfredson's a dirty player.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That took me back a bit as I was first confused. Then I was offended that someone would call my dear captain a dirty player. His only point for Alfie being a dirty player was the shot he took at Niedermeyer. Now, I know he's a Leafs fan, and I know most of them are just dumb, but I never thought that other hockey fans would think of Alfie as dirty. I was just wondering what you guys thought about this. I haven't been around for as long as you guys have, so I've only seen Alfie play past the 04 lockout. Has he done anything significant to be labeled a dirty player? Gabrielle,
I got an answer for you. You just turn to that Leafs player and you say, yeah, Alfie is a dirty player. Don't you wish your captain was like Alfie?
Oh, okay, so there's competition for the fromage title now. Okay, that's good.
Yes, he's a dirty player.
Anybody who comes up with a take that stupid, just berate them for how stupid they're being and move on. That I've heard this one a couple of times, and it's either, well, the shot he took at Niedermeyer, or, well, the shot that he took when he hit Tucker from behind into the boards and then scored the goal.
He's either got a rib problem or a shoulder problem. Alfredson nails him from behind. Oh, man, that's got separated shoulder written all over it on the left side.
Oh, man, separated shoulder written all over it.
That's the answer. What I call that? That's a hockey play.
Yeah.
That was a hockey play. He was, and Tucker played his next shift.
I know.
Give me a break.
And don't forget that time that he pretended to throw the stick into the crowd to kind of make fun of Sundin.
Make fun of his buddy?
Yeah.
He was mocking his buddy, and his buddy was laughing at it, but that's being disrespectful.
Oh yes.
Shut up. This is the team that's had Domi and Tucker and Armstrong and Mark Bell,
ding,
who in one game, elbow to the head to Alfie, and then it was a knee to Fisher, and who was the third player he took out? I'm just blanking on that one.
I can't remember. But,
no, but he was wearing a cage, so nobody could do anything about it, so he was just running wild. So any team that employs somebody like that, you're a fan of that team and you think that's okay, but you think Alfie's dirty, whatever.
So just to recap, Gabrielle, you turn to him and say, yes, he is, and you better fear him.
And you know what? No, I don't think anyone is proud of him for what he did in regards to shooting the puck at Niedermeyer and actually going back to some of the previous underground episodes. That probably cost him the playoff MVP.
Maybe.
Yeah, possibly.
But we've all been there. It's a heat-of-the-moment thing.
Yeah, it's a heat-of-the-moment thing, exactly. And he's been the victim of dirty plays. Has he been different than other ones? No.
Was that something that he normally does? Is this something that it was just a symptom of, yep, this is his character, he's doing it again? Or was that an anomaly?
He just gets frustrated by things, exactly.
That was an anomaly.
Just like him with the Gatorade bottle in the playoffs last year.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
At least he shows a passion like some other guys, which we've seen.
Nice. So, I think we've hashed that one to death, but thanks for the email, Gabrielle.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Canuck, you're up.
Good email from Homer in the forums. Hey guys, just a couple comments about things you talked about in this week's show. Face-off rule, where a player commits a second face-off violation on the same face-off, gets a 2-minute delay game penalty. Well, this has actually been around for a number of years. I think it was brought up at the same time as the hurry-up face-offs, or when all face-offs are to take place at the 9 face-off dots. Easy one to forget, you rarely see it, so kind of like playoff games in Toronto. So, yeah, I guess that one has been around, and it's just kind of funny that the refs dusted that one off the rule books. Homer also goes on. Sorry, Cardinal?
I was just going to say, they had a lot of time during the lockout to go over the obscure rules in the rule book. That's why we're seeing it.
No kidding. On hand passes, they're still allowed in the defensive zones. Yes, I have seen that. It's just not allowed on the face-off, even if the defensive goal in order... even in the defensive goal in order to win the faceoff. So, yeah, that seems to be cleared up. And he actually quotes the rule for us, which you don't need to read because it's a dry rule. But basically just kind of clarifying what we were talking about in our last episode. Defensive passes are allowed in your own zone, but anything else, and especially off the faceoff, you can't use your hands.
Zen and Kanopka rule.
Yeah. Next point on Yakupov's goal celebration. I didn't really have any problems with it. It was a game-tying goal with just a few seconds left. What gets me is Don Cherry's reaction to these type of goal celebrations. He hates them and chastises players who do it, unless they're Fleury. Here's a quote from Cherry. I'm telling you, the LA is going to remember this. They'll remember this to the dying day. You don't do stuff like that. This coming from the guy who every week gives himself a tap on the back saying how great he is, how he's always right, how he called it months and even years ago, things like, play that coach's clip from 2 months ago. See, told you, called it 2 months ago. On Spezza, he makes an amazing play. It was me who drafted him with the Ice Dogs. Yeah, okay, Don. If you had drafted Spezza to play for the Ice Dogs, he'd be flipping burgers at McDonald's. He all owes his success to you. Sorry, if you hadn't drafted him, he'd be flipping at McDonald's. He owes his success to you, Don. That windbag Cherry is all about getting attention, being controversial and loud, and I don't mean his suits. When a player shows some flair, he craps on them. I bet you that in the next LA-Edmonton game, Yakupov gets hit hard, Cherry will play this week's coach's cornerback and be like, see, told you they'd get him back, and proceed to tap himself on the back. Paul, a.k.a. Homer in the forums. Well, yeah, can't disagree with you there, Paul. Don Cherry is a bit of a windbag sometimes, but I guess he's just in the entertainment business. What else do you expect?
Exactly. People still want to hear him. People still want to see him, so they like the shtick. A lot of people don't like it, but a lot of people seem to still like it. Otherwise, he wouldn't be there anymore. Got a second email from Paul because he forgot something in the first one. It reads, I almost forgot to mention something about Ben Bishop. CapGeek has him listed as a restricted free agent next season, but that's not entirely accurate. Bishop could fall into what's called a Group 6 unrestricted free agent category. It's from the last CBA, and I don't think it's changed to the new one. Basically, it's for players who are 25 years or older, they've completed 3 professional seasons, and in the case of a goaltender, has played less than 80 games. Sorry, a player other than a goaltender is less than 80 games. In the case of a goaltender, it's played less than 28 NHL games. They would fall into that category. Bishop's 26. He's played more than 3 years, and he's played only 24. So he has to play at least 7 more if he's going to remain a restricted free agent. This could become a factor if the Sens try to trade him at the trade deadline, or they could simply qualify him and trade him later in the offseason. That is, if they plan on bringing Leonard up. Cheers, Homer. That's something that was mentioned an awful lot at the beginning of the season, that they have to get him to play 7 games.
He'll play seven games.
Oh, I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the game that he had against Tampa, did he have a great game? No. Did the rest of the team?
No. I'm not worried about Bishop.
No, not at all. Yeah, I'm not worried about him at all. He had a bad outing, but so did the rest of the team. And, you know, apparently Tampa feasts on a lot of teams this way. Long travel down to Florida. They play in Florida, and then the next night they're always in Tampa. So they're getting everybody on a back-to-back.
Yeah.
Rather than playing Tampa first and then going to Florida, they get a lot of teams coming through that always play Florida first.
It's almost so like the Maple Leaf schedule syndrome.
Well, I'm wondering how much that affects their win-loss record. If they're getting a lot of teams that are tired after playing the night before with a lot of travel for an Eastern team that's not used to it that much.
And an Eastern team that's coming down from a cold climate, getting into that warm weather and probably enjoying it a little bit.
Exactly. The climate change and everything else. So I wonder how much that affects their record, because, I mean, they're doing pretty well, but what's their away record versus their home record? I don't know. So, yeah, Bishop, I'm sure he'll play 7.
Yeah, even looking at February, there's 2 times there's back-to-back games. The first week or so, there's 5 games in 8 nights. He's got to play again soon.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he will. And I have no worry about it.
Yeah, 7 games, I think that'll be okay. There might be some type of reduction on a per capita or something like that because of the shortened season. But even at that, I'm sure he's going to play 7. Otherwise, you got Andy playing way too much.
He's not sticking around here in Ottawa, I don't think, after this year anyway. So,
and I think
he wants to have his rights.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely, because there's value to that. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then if you don't, then you got to move him before the trade deadline or at the trade deadline. Then you don't really leave yourself a backup except for Leonard.
Well, it depends on what comes back in the trade.
It won't be a goal. Oh, I don't need a goal.
Luongo, here you go.
Oh, just ruin everything.
Just what we need, a circus.
Exactly.
All right. Blair Brown. Dear Sens call-ups. Oh, wait, sorry. Subject, Spetz's team. Well, this is kind of timely, isn't it? Just finished listening to episode 9 of your podcast and your lack of email rant. And I'd like to say great job. Thanks. Someone says that. I've been a Sens fan since the inaugural season, and because I live on the outskirts of Laugh Nation, it has not always been easy. The lack of hockey knowledge in this area is astounding, so it has been nice to listen to you guys while I'm at work to get my hockey talk fix. But that Leafs at lunch or whatever, that doesn't work for you? The comment I'd like to say is regarding Spezza. I know in the past Sens Army has been critical of his play, and I have as well, but I've noticed in at least the first 5 games that he is playing with some heart. He is shooting the puck and going to the dirty areas of the ice and coming up with the puck. I even noticed that in the Panthers game. Him getting involved with the scrums and clearing players away from Anderson. I know that he's not burning up the score sheet like he has in the past, but I'm not as worried as his on-ice decisions as I have been in the past. Have any of you noticed this change in Spezza? And if so, do you think that it's because of Paul McLean's coaching, or could it be that he's trying to be the leader we all hoped he would become? I hope by the time you read this email, if he's still playing well, if he's still playing well, and I look forward to hearing from you guys in regards to what you have to say. Sincerely, Blair Brown. P.S. Go Sens Go. P.P.S. And as always, Leafs suck!
Well, I don't think any of us are worried about his on-the-ice decisions right now.
You know what? I think that's probably a big part in regards to Paul McLean, as Blair mentioned, especially during the time with Corey Klussen. It's do what I say, do what I say, do what I say. Spezza seems to have a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And granted, yeah, he's the first-round pick, right?
I'd say a disc on his back.
Okay, this has got to end.
Canucks, that's your first warning.
Yeah.
What happens when I get my second warning? Don't make me turn this car around.
Can you hit that sound bite again, please?
Which one?
Stank. No. Okay. I totally lost my train of thought.
I would actually say I would agree with what Blair has written, at least in part. I think part of it is a maturing process for Spezza, that he's not 22 anymore. I mean, he's 29, 30. So, I mean, he's a father. So he's not quite as happy-go-lucky as an individual anymore. He's more grown up just as a person. And I think that's also being reflected in his hockey play, that he's not trying to do the 6 dangles and back passes and through the feet and everything else. He's trying to get the job done properly. Not how fancy can I do it, but how well can I do it? And I think the coach, McLean, he's a very positive guy. I mean, he's very exacting in the practices. He wants stuff done right. But he's also very positive about when people are doing it right, telling them that. And if they're not doing right, he wants them to fix it. He's not just saying, you're doing it wrong. It's, here's what's not working. Let's do it right.
And I think also McLean was something that came out at least last year was, and Greg said, if you want to try it, okay, we'll give it a shot your way. But if it doesn't work, or even not that, it's my final decision. Exactly. So that's more of a participative manager type of coach, where I know like myself, that's where I do a lot better at work versus just being the order taker like under a Klussen. And I know with Jacques Martin, him and Spezza and Martin didn't set off on the right foot at all, especially being a defensive-minded coach. That wasn't Spezza's game, nor did he know how to play defensively, nor has he really learned to. I think under the McLean system, that's probably working more. Seeing him dig and go to the dirty places, yeah, absolutely. This year's been a lot more different than previous years. But we've seen that through other players too. Like we mentioned, Phillips getting a lot dirtier in the last game. Everyone really sticking up for each other, and I'm liking it. It's going to be hard to see what happens without him, but no, he did have a great start to the season.
Yeah, Exactly. I don't think I got nothing to add to that. Canuck?
Speedy recovery, Spencer.
Sums it up. Okay. Next email. This is great. I love having so much email to read. This is fantastic. This one's from Sean. Subject is, hey guys. I think you guys could comment on the future of our defensive pairings. Obviously, Carlson is going to be one half of it, but I think if we could acquire another elite D-man, we would have a Weber-Suter situation of having the best D-pairing in the league. I think Dustin Byfuglien from the Jets would be ideal. He was second to Carlson last season in points, and his size and physicality would be the perfect complement for Carlson. He's also young enough to be elite for the next 6 to 7 seasons, which I think would be the best window for a cup we'll have until we have talent to replace Spezza. Just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on whether we need a top-line talent to play with Carlson to be a contender, who it might be, and what it might cost to get him. I think we have a pretty good defensive partner to play with him right now. I've been really impressed with Mark Methot with how he's playing so far. He's a big guy. He's very defensively minded. He's not afraid to throw a big check, but he's also really fast for his size. He's not a sort of a lumbering big guy. He's big, but he also can move if he needs to. And his hands, I mean, he is a defensive player, but he can make an outlet pass pretty well. He looks around, finds Carlson, and makes an outlet to his defensive partner. I'm perfectly happy with where that is right now. I don't think we need to go out and find somebody else. And if it was, I wouldn't want to see Dustin Byfuglien being the other half.
He'd give up too much for him, and the Jets aren't going to get rid of him. Think about it. We got Carlson and Methot. They're working very well together. Now, we still have Jared Cowan, who's injured. And he is going to be a key corner piece of this franchise. So he's going to have a partner. We have Lundin, who I don't have high hopes for Lundin, but he's going to be back in a few weeks.
He's on a 1 year, though. So, if we're looking long term, Cowan's probably the piece.
Yeah.
And if not Cowan, we've got Cody Ceci on the way, too.
Yeah. And, Weirkoch and Benoit, those guys are filling in just perfect. I don't think you make a big move here.
And some of those guys are quite young and will be around for years. Benoit's 28, but Weirkoch and Borowiecki, they're under 23, somewhere in there. Cody Ceci's 19.
And there's other guys like Greiba who are in the system, right? So
yeah, another young player who's a good, solid defensive guy who's plus 22 in the AHL right now.
Well, being a 1-2 guy, though, I think the only two potentials we may have in the system right now are probably this Cody Ceci and Jared Cowan. So I think that's really where the question kind of came from.
Yeah.
Do we really want to give something up to get that piece right now?
Let's undress.
So. Okay, if we're giving away Latondres, I don't think we're getting back a defensive product that we really need.
Do you want to just kind of tell him that he actually still plays for Minnesota and there was a mistake?
Could do. Good try. Anyway, I don't think we need to make any sort of trade like that, at least right now. All right. Last one.
All right. Last email is from Warren. And the subject is Sens, Pens, Sins. Whoa, say that 10 times fast. Sens, Pens, Sins. I have a feeling this is going to be at refereeing. Hey, guys, is it just me? Or was there an awful lot of clutching, grabbing, and stick entanglement in this game? In other words, all sorts of surreptitious, word is that? Impediment to players that didn't merit the new interference call? Looks like a game in the late 1990s to early 2000s. There may have been, I think there was lots of clutching and grabbing. Frig, I think of that Silverberg breakaway in overtime, which apparently you're allowed to do what they did. But you're right, Warren, there's absolutely no interference in this game. Wow. Also, I was concerned by the two or three hits along the boards of downed or vulnerable players. Zach Smith's head getting acquainted with the corner boards while on his butt was appalling. I forgot who the Pens player was. Was it White? We talked about this earlier.
Tanner. It was Tanner Glass.
Yeah, but we didn't receive an infraction on the play. And to top it off, the commentators were defending his character for not being a dirty player. That's not an excuse. Did you guys see what I saw? Thoughts? Yeah, I saw it. And this whole season, there's not been a game go by, Warren, where I have not just thrown my hands up in the air and not understood the penalties. And I'm not just being a homer here. I'm talking about penalties that are against the opposing team. They call it interference call, especially, and I don't get it. They're touching the puck carrier, and they're calling interference penalties. I don't get it anymore. I hope they get over it and they stop it. I didn't notice a lot of crutching and grabbing. I was at the game live. I didn't necessarily notice that. I don't know if it came through what you guys saw at the Pens game. I just noticed it on the overtime with that breakaway. But I don't know. What are your thoughts here?
It's a Pens game.
I know you can't touch Crosby. That's all I know. Or Malkin.
I didn't see a lot of... I thought it was just a messy game. There wasn't a lot of flow. There was a lot of... I don't know if I call it necessarily clutching and grabbing, but there was a lot of people in each other's space. There wasn't a lot of flow to what was going on. But that one hit by Tanner Glass on Zach Smith, when Zach Smith was down on the ice and then he gets his head rammed into the boards, no call. I couldn't believe that. Well, I could actually. That was the problem. I could believe that nothing had been called on it, but I thought it was astonishing and appalling that nothing had happened. And I think that's probably why Zach Smith was just so pissed off by the time the Montreal game came around, that when he got run, he just grabbed the guy and said, all right, I've had it. This isn't going to happen anymore. And just started throwing punches. But I'm hoping that this is just early refereeing, early in the season refereeing problems. We'll see.
Yeah, and Zach Smith's just been getting rough right in the last couple of games. But don't forget that this is also sucking the schlong that is Sidney Crosby, right?
All right.
The league will bend over and take it because it's Crosby and he's the golden child.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of that goes on with that team, but enough. Well, hopefully we don't have to play them again for a while. And hopefully we don't run into Peel or O'Rourke or whoever those goalies were and run in for a while either. Quickly, got a couple of games coming up tomorrow, Friday. The Sens are at the Hurricanes. On Sunday, they're in Montreal for the return visit to the Habs. And then next Tuesday, they're back at home against the Sabres. Not sure if we're going to have another game after that before our next broadcast, but those are at least the first three that are coming up. I don't know about you guys, but I find three or four games every single week is going to get tiring after a while. Just even to watch them all. Yeah. There's just so much hockey that's on. It's like, okay, there's a lot to watch. This is getting a little tiring.
Yeah, it's been quite intense.
Yeah, and it's going to be like this forever.
Yeah, I almost got the Caps game as my free ticket too. So I would have been at the Scotiabank Place on Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week.
Oy.
That's got to be intense for the full season ticket holders.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if it's not a corporate seat, it's actually people who own them all. That's all. And think of the parking you're spending. Like, that's a lot of money on parking, money on food. Never mind the I have to get out there three nights a week.
Yeah.
That's a lot of sitting in traffic.
It's major commitment.
Yeah, it really is.
And if you're following in the SensUnderground.com forums, we do have the prediction panel, and I'm trying to keep that up to date. Pan, you're leading with six predictions correct.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, Cardinal and I are at five, and the rest continue down. It's kind of fun.
I think a lot of us actually have better records than the Sens Extra one right now.
Yeah, well, because the Sens Underground Russell didn't pass along their recommendation to us, we're just gonna do it on our own and show how much better we are than those guys, right?
Yeah.
They'll have to pay us to be part of it next year. We won't do it for free.
That's right.
We'll do it for free.
Yeah, they will. Anything else you guys want to bring up? I think we should put a wrap on this. We've been going on long enough.
And that's all we've got here. So don't forget. I really want to hear your thoughts on Laton Dress.
Okay. More email, folks.
Podcast.
Pan wants to hear about Laton Dress.
Podcast at sendscallups.com.
Exactly. Visit the forums. The game threads are pretty fun these days, but there are threads about other than just game threads going on as well. You can find them at sendsunderground.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter. Twitter was pretty entertaining, especially after the Habs game the other night. It's never dull.
I got in never trouble dull by these guys.
Oh, that Vic Nasty 2.0 Montreal fan. Like,
oh, she was
your priced. Arena isn't even downtown. Oh, where have you heard this before?
Yeah.
Toronto has 12 lanes. You only have 4 lanes. Like, really? That's all you got? Burn.
Yeah, wow. I'm really hurting. Yeah, you fans of the losing team, you're really hurting me. I'll go home. All right, we're out of here until our next broadcast. So on behalf of Canuck and Pan, I'm Cardinal. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Email the show.
Go Sens, go.